This is side two, take two of the Baha'i Faith, continuing from page 70. Hands of the Cause of God. References were made in Baha'i scripture to the appointment of a very select group of Baha'is who would be chosen to give outstanding service to the cause. In his will and testament, Abdul Baha explained how they would be appointed and the duties they would perform. The hands of the cause of God must be nominated and appointed by the guardian of the cause of God. All must be under his shadow and obey his command. 71. The obligations of the hands of the cause of God are to diffuse the divine fragrances, to edify the souls of men, to promote learning, to improve the character of all men, and to be at all times and under all conditions sanctified and detached from earthly things. They must manifest the fear of God by their conduct, their manners, their deeds, and their words. This body of the hands of the cause of God is under the direction of the guardian of the cause of God. He must continually urge them to strive and endeavor to the utmost of their ability to diffuse the sweet savors of God and to guide all the peoples of the world, for it is the light of divine guidance that causeth all the universe to be illumined. 32 hands of the cause were appointed by Shoghi Effendi during the years 1951-1957. It was as chief stewards that the hands of the cause of God took over the reins of the affairs of the cause after the sudden and unexpected passing of Shoghi Effendi in 1957, until the Universal House of Justice was elected in 1963. 72. Auxiliary Board Members. In April 1954, the Guardian called upon those hands of the cause then appointed to select in each continent and from among the resident Baha'is of that continent some believers to be known as Auxiliary Board Members, who would act as deputies, assistants, and advisors of the hands. These auxiliary board members work directly under the guidance of the hands of the cause, and although subject to the overall requirements of the Baha'i administration, were not involved in it. Continental Boards of Counselors. According to the will and testament of Abdul Baha, the guardian had to appoint his successor from among his descendants, but Shoghi Effendi had no children, nor was there anyone who could measure up to the high standards indicated in the will. It was also clear that only the guardian could appoint hands of the cause. When the Universal House of Justice was elected in 1963, one of its first tasks was to examine Baha'i scripture and the writings of Shoghi Effendi to see if there was any provision at all for another guardian. If there could be no guardian, who would arrange for the appointment of more hands of the cause? On 6 October 1963, the following announcement was made. After prayerful and careful study of the holy texts bearing upon the question of the appointment of the successor to Shoghi Effendi as guardian of the cause of God, and after prolonged consultation which included consideration of the views of the hands of the cause of God residing in the Holy Land, the Universal House of Justice finds that there is no way to appoint or legislate to make it possible to appoint a second guardian to succeed Shoghi Effendi. In November 1964, the Universal House of Justice further announced that after giving its full attention to the matter and study of the sacred scriptures and hearing the views of the hands of the cause themselves, it had arrived at the following decision. There is no way to appoint or to legislate to make it possible to appoint hands of the cause of God. Responsibility for decisions on matters of general policy affecting the institutions of the hands of the cause, which was formerly exercised by the beloved guardian, page 73, now devolves upon the Universal House of Justice as the supreme and central institution of the faith to which all must turn. In 1968, the Universal House of Justice announced the formation of 11 Continental Boards of Counselors, 3 boards each for Africa, the Americas, and Asia, and 1 each for Europe and Australasia, and wrote, "Their duties will include directing the auxiliary boards in their respective areas, consulting and collaborating with national spiritual assemblies, and keeping the hands of the cause and the Universal House of Justice informed concerning the conditions of the cause in their areas." This decision immediately freed the hands from the administration of the auxiliary boards, and the letter from the Universal House of Justice made the position quite clear. The hands of the cause of God are one of the most precious assets the Baha'i world possesses. Released from administration of the auxiliary boards, they will be able to concentrate their energies on the more primary responsibilities of general protection and propagation, preservation of the spiritual health of the Baha'i communities, and the vitality of the faith of the Baha'is throughout the world. 24 June 1968. International Teaching Center. In June 1973, the Universal House of Justice announced the formation of yet another institution of this continually expanding community. Anticipated in Baha'i writings, this new body would consist of all the hands of the cause around the world, plus 3 counselors, and would, among its other duties, coordinate and stimulate and direct the activities of the Continental Boards of Counselors and act as liaisons between them and the Universal House of Justice. be fully informed of the situation of the calls in all parts of the world, and be able, from the background of this knowledge, to make reports and recommendations to the Universal House of Justice, and give advice to the Continental Boards of Counselors. Be alert to possibilities, both within and without the Baha'i community, for the extension of the teaching work into receptive or needy areas, and to draw attention of the Universal House of Justice and the Continental Boards of Counselors to such possibilities, making recommendations for action. Universal House of Justice. Verse 74. Local Spiritual Assemblies. In his writings, Baha'u'llah had referred on many occasions to the local houses of justice. In his Book of Laws, he wrote, "The Lord hath ordained that in every city a house of justice be established, wherein shall gather counselors to the number of Baha, 9. It behooveth them to be the trusted ones of the merciful among men, and to regard themselves as the guardians appointed of God for all that dwell on earth." Abu Baha referred to these bodies as spiritual assemblies, and in one passage wrote, "These spiritual assemblies are shining lamps and heavenly gardens, from which the fragrances of holiness are diffused over all regions, and the lights of knowledge are shed abroad over all created things. From them the spirit of life streameth in every direction. They indeed are the potent sources of the progress of man, at all times and under all conditions." The formation of local spiritual assemblies is therefore a goal for every group of Baha'is the world over, and in enlarging upon their function, the Universal House of Justice wrote in April 1974, "The divinely ordained institution of the local spiritual assembly operates at the first levels of human society and is the basic administrative unit of Baha'u'llah's world order. It is concerned with individuals and families whom it must constantly encourage to unite in a distinctive Baha'i society, vitalized and guarded by the laws, ordinances, and principles of Baha'u'llah's revelation. It protects the cause of God. It acts as the loving shepherd of the Baha'i flock. Strengthening and development of the local spiritual assemblies is a vital objective and will demonstrate the solidarity and ever-growing distinctiveness of the Baha'i community, thereby attracting more and more thoughtful souls to the faith and offering a refuge to the leaderless and hapless millions of the spiritually bankrupt, moribund present order. The friends are called upon to give their wholehearted support and cooperation to the local spiritual assembly," page 75, "first by voting for the membership, and then by energetically pursuing its plans and programs, by turning to it in time of trouble or difficulty, by praying for its success and taking delight in its rise to influence and honor. This great prize, this gift of God within each community, must be cherished, nurtured, loved, assisted, obeyed, and prayed for. Such a firmly founded, busy, and happy community life, as is envisioned when the local spiritual assemblies are truly effective, will provide a firm home foundation from which the friends may derive courage and strength and loving support in bearing the divine message to their fellow men and conforming their lives to its benevolent rule." Universal House of Justice, April 1974. The local spiritual assemblies are, except in special cases, elected annually on the first day of the Rizwan Festival, that is, from sunset 20 April to sunset 21 April. The members are elected by secret ballot without any nominations or canvassing from among all the adult believers in the town, village, district, or other area for which the assembly will be responsible. These areas vary from country to country, but are always the smallest recognized civil administrative unit of that country. In the United Kingdom, the unit is the district or the London Bureau. In March 1923, Shoghi Effendi spelled out some of the duties of these spiritual assemblies. "The matter of teaching, its direction, its ways and means, its extension, its consolidation, essential as they are to the interests of the cause, constitute by no means the only issue which should receive the full attention of these assemblies. They must endeavor to promote amity and concord amongst the friends, efface every lingering trace of distrust, coolness, and estrangement from every heart, and secure in its stead an active and wholehearted cooperation for the service of the cause. They must do their utmost to extend at all times the helping hand to the poor, the sick, the disabled, the orphan, the widow, irrespective of color, caste, and creed. They must promote by every means in their power the material as well as the spiritual enlightenment of youth, the means for the education of children, institute, whenever possible, Baha'i educational institutions, and organize and supervise their work and provide the best means for their progress and development." Page 76. National Spiritual Assemblies. Abdu'l-Baha, when describing in his will and testament how the Universal House of Justice should be elected, referred to secondary houses of justice, and in 1923 the Guardian called upon certain countries to form national spiritual assemblies. From his letter we read, Its immediate purpose is to stimulate, unify, and coordinate by frequent personal consultations the manifold activities of the Friends as well as the local assemblies, and by keeping in close and constant touch with the Holy Land, initiate measures and direct, in general, the affairs of the cause in that country. It serves also another purpose, no less essential than the first, as in the course of time it shall evolve into the National House of Justice, which, according to the explicit text of the Testament, will have, in conjunction with the other national assemblies throughout the Baha'i world, to elect directly the members of the International House of Justice, that Supreme Council that will guide, organize, and unify the affairs of the movement throughout the world. In the years that followed, more and more national assemblies came into existence, and gradually, through the guidance given to them by the Guardian, their functions became clear, and they gained in strength and authority. As soon as possible, after the formation of a national spiritual assembly, it seeks to obtain a legal identity, and it becomes incorporated in whatever way is possible best to embody the universal standards for such Baha'i administrative bodies as are clearly described in Baha'i writings. Local assemblies may similarly be incorporated, as this is further evidence of their stability and permanence. The National Administrative Body in the British Isles has been in existence for over 55 years, being responsible until 1972 for the whole of the British Isles, then subsequently, with the formation of the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of the Republic of Ireland, being concerned only with the affairs of the United Kingdom. It was incorporated in 1939. Page 77. Convention. National assemblies the world over are elected by delegates who normally meet at a national convention during the Rizwan Festival, that is, between 21 April and 2 May. The convention has three main functions. Firstly, to receive the reports of the outgoing national assembly. Secondly, to elect the new national assembly. And thirdly, to consult with the incoming assembly. Officers. All assemblies, national and local, elect by majority vote from their 9 members the offices of chairman, vice chairman, secretary, and treasurer, but no officer has any powers other than those given by the assembly itself. Baha'i elections. The pattern of Baha'i elections set by the Guardian in his early letters to the American Baha'i community is so completely different from anything we can find in the world of politics that it is worthy of close examination. The elections are yet another aspect of the distinctive nature of Baha'i life. They bring about a balance between authority and freedom, which can be found in none of the existing political systems of the world, for with the supreme authority of the Word of God, on the one hand, and the absolute freedom of the individual to vote for whomever his conscience leads him, to choose on the other, a system of ideal government at local, national, and international levels is found within the Baha'i world community. The voter, quietly and in a prayerful attitude, secretly records his vote, is free from any pressure and is confident of the rightness of the outcome when all the votes are counted. Whoever is elected by the method of plurality voting, which is adopted throughout the Baha'i world at all levels, except for the majority vote used for officer elections, is immediately and wholeheartedly accepted by the electorate. The following paragraph, written in 1925 primarily for delegates at a national convention, sets a standard for all Baha'i elections at whatever level. How great the privilege, how delicate the task of the assembled delegates whose function it is to elect such national representatives as would, by their record of service, ennoble and enrich the annals of the cause. If we but turn our gaze to the high qualifications of the members of Baha'i assemblies, page 78, we are filled with the feelings of unworthiness and dismay, and would feel truly disheartened but for the comforting thought that if we rise to play nobly our part, every deficiency in our lives will be more than compensated by the all-conquering spirit of His grace and power. Hence it is incumbent upon the chosen delegates to consider without the least trace of passion and prejudice, and irrespective of any material consideration, the names of only those who can best combine the necessary qualities of unquestioned loyalty, of selfless devotion, of a well-trained mind, of recognized ability and mature experience. Shoghi Effendi. High Administrative Standard. Once elected, the members of every Baha'i administrative body have before them a standard to achieve which seems almost impossible to attain, but which is the goal of every assembly, whether it be among the sophisticated peoples of London, New York, Tokyo, Tehran, or Buenos Aires, or among the Pygmies in the jungles of Central Africa, the Lapps of Finland, or the Aborigines of Australia. The following quotations touch briefly on some of the elements of this high standard. Let us remember that at the very root of the cause lies the principle of the undoubted right of the individual to self-expression, his freedom to declare his conscience and set forth his views. Let us also bear in mind that the keynote of the cause of God is not dictatorial authority, but humble fellowship, not arbitrary power, but the spirit of frank and loving consultation. Nothing short of the spirit of a true Baha'i can hope to reconcile the principles of mercy and justice, of freedom and submission, of the sanctity of the right of the individual and of self-surrender, of vigilance, discretion, and prudence on the one hand, and fellowship, candor, and courage on the other. The duties of those whom the Friends have freely and consciously elected as their representatives are no less vital and binding than the obligations of those who have chosen them. Their function is not to dictate, but to consult, and consult not only among themselves, but as much as possible with the Friends whom they represent. They must regard themselves in no other light but that of chosen instruments for a more efficient and dignified presentation of the cause of God. Page 79. They should never be led to suppose that they are the central ornaments of the body of the cause, intrinsically superior to others in capacity or merit, and sole promoters of its teachings and principles. They should approach their task with extreme humility, and endeavor by their open-mindedness, their high sense of justice and duty, their candor, their modesty, their entire devotion to the welfare and interest of the Friends, the cause, and humanity, to win not only the confidence and the genuine support and respect of those whom they serve, but also their esteem and real affection. They must at all times avoid the spirit of exclusiveness, the atmosphere of secrecy, free themselves from a domineering attitude, and banish all forms of prejudice and passion from their deliberations. They should, within the limits of wise discretion, take the Friends into their confidence, acquaint them with their plans, share with them their problems and anxieties, and seek their advice and counsel. And when they are called upon to arrive at a certain decision, they should, after dispassionate, anxious, and cordial consultation, turn to God in prayer, and with earnestness and conviction and courage, record their vote and abide by the voice of the majority, which we are told by our Master to be the voice of truth, never to be challenged, and always to be wholeheartedly enforced. To this voice the Friends must heartily respond, and regard it as the only means that can ensure the protection and advancement of the cause. Let it be made clear to every inquiring reader that among the most outstanding and sacred duties incumbent upon those who have been called upon to initiate, direct, and coordinate the affairs of the cause are those that require them to win by every means in their power the confidence and affection of those whom it is their privilege to serve. Theirs is the duty to investigate and acquaint themselves with the considered views, the prevailing sentiments, the personal conviction of those whose welfare it is their solemn obligation to promote. Shoghi Effendi. 19-Day Feast. It will be seen later that in the Baha'i calendar there are 19 months, and on the first day of the month there is held a most unique type of meeting. Page 80. Essentially, it is an administrative occasion, for it is the time when the local spiritual assembly consults with its community, acquaints the community of its plans, and seeks consultation on the affairs of the community. This meeting is called a 19-day feast. Although the feast consists of three separate parts, they are arranged so that the whole occasion is one of great spiritual upliftment and helps to deepen the unity of the Friends. Only registered Baha'is may be present at a 19-day feast, and Baha'is who are not in their home community are encouraged to attend the 19-day feast of the place they are visiting. The first part of the feast is essentially devotional, and appropriate selections from Baha'i scriptures are read, sung, or chanted. This period is followed immediately by the consultation period under the direction of the representatives of the local spiritual assembly. Reports are made on the various activities of the local assembly and any of its committees, and by the treasurer on the state of the local fund. When the consultation period is concluded, the Friends have refreshments which may vary from a simple glass of water to a substantial meal. The 19-day feast is therefore yet another distinctive feature of the Baha'i community and part of the life of every Baha'i. It is of interest to note that a child or infant may be registered as a Baha'i by its parents and will be instructed in the laws, teachings, and history of its faith. He will be encouraged to study religion widely and know the basic elements and history of all the world's religions. At the age of 15, the Baha'i child must then assume his responsibilities as a Baha'i, though, as we have seen, he may not vote in Baha'i elections until he reaches the age of 21. A child, even of Baha'i parents, who has not by the age of 15 expressed the wish to become a member of the Baha'i community and declared his or her belief as a Baha'i, may not attend a 19-day feast. Where a Baha'i community has joyous, vigorous, and fruitful 19-day feasts, it is certain that the community will be active, growing, and completely united. Assistance to auxiliary board members. It should be noted that the hands of the cause and boards of counselors work directly with national spiritual assemblies. Auxiliary board members work closely with local assemblies and individual believers. The hands and the counselors, being appointed respectively by the guardian and the Universal House of Justice, page 82, are not part of the elected side of the administrative order and do not stand for election to the national assemblies. Board members are, however, encouraged to appoint assistants to carry out specific tasks for them, and these assistants may remain on any administrative body to which they are elected or any committee to which they have been appointed, either by a local or by the National Assembly. On 1 October 1969, the Universal House of Justice further clarified the respective roles of elected and appointed members as follows. It is the responsibility of spiritual assemblies, assisted by their committees, to organize and direct the teaching work, and in doing so, they must naturally also do all they can to stimulate and inspire the Friends. It is, however, inevitable that the assemblies and committees, being burdened with the administration of the teaching work as well as with all other aspects of Baha'i community life, will be unable to spend as much time as they would wish on stimulating the believers. Authority and direction flow from the assemblies, whereas the power to accomplish the tasks resides primarily in the entire body of the believers. It is the principal task of the auxiliary boards to assist in arousing and releasing this power. This is a vital activity, and if they are to be able to perform it adequately, they must avoid becoming involved in the work of administration. It is to help the auxiliary board members to assist in arousing and releasing the power to accomplish the tasks and to encourage the believers to return spontaneously to their auxiliary board members for inspiration and to the assemblies for guidance and direction that the work of the assistants is directed. Committees, local and national. Members of local and national assemblies are elected for the qualities of loyalty, devotion, ability, and experience, but they are rarely specialists in every field of community activity. Committees of experts are therefore appointed. All committees are responsible only to the assembly which appointed them. They meet, elect their officers, consult on their activities, carry out their specific terms of reference, and report as required to the administrative body which appointed them. Page 83. Leadership, therefore, in the Baha'i community is not found in individuals, but in the elected administrative bodies, and these bodies seek to use the expertise, the zeal, and the enthusiasm of the members of the community so that all believers may fully participate in whatever field their interests lie. This personal involvement and commitment is another exciting and distinctive aspect of Baha'i life. The Twin Pillars, Chapter 2, How the Baha'is Live, shows that there are two sides to the World Administrative Order of Baha'u'llah. On the one hand is the appointed side with the guardian of the Baha'i faith appointed in the will and testament of Abdu'l-Bahá, the appointment by the guardian of the hands of the cause, the appointment by the Universal House of Justice of the counselors, who in turn appoint auxiliary board members, and who in their turn appoint their assistants. On the purely administrative side, the rank and file of the believers elect their local spiritual assemblies and their delegates. Their delegates elect the national assemblies, and the members of the national assemblies elect the members of the Universal House of Justice. The Guardian of the Baha'i Faith, in his letter of 8 February 1934, subsequently published under the title The Dispensation of Baha'u'llah, spoke of the two institutions of the Guardianship and the Universal House of Justice as the twin pillars that support this mighty administrative structure. In the next paragraph of that same letter he wrote, "These twin institutions of the administrative order of Baha'u'llah should be regarded as divine in origin, essential in their functions, and complementary in their aim and purpose. Their common, their fundamental object is to ensure the continuity of that divinely appointed authority which flows from the source of our faith, to safeguard the unity of its followers, and to maintain the integrity and flexibility of its teachings. Acting in conjunction with each of the other, these two inseparable institutions administer its affairs, coordinate its activities, promote its interests, execute its laws, and defend its subsidiary institutions. Severally, each operates within a clearly defined sphere of jurisdiction. Each is equipped with its own attendant institutions, instruments designed for the effective discharge of its particular responsibilities and duties." Page 84. In explaining still further, the Universal House of Justice wrote in 1965, "Unity of doctrine is maintained by the existence of the authentic texts of Scripture and the voluminous interpretations of Abdu'l-Bahá and Shoghi Effendi, together with the absolute prohibition against anyone propounding authoritative or inspired interpretations, or usurping the function of guardian. Unity of administration is assured by the authority of the Universal House of Justice. Such, in the words of Shoghi Effendi, is the immutability of his revealed word. Such is the elasticity which characterizes the functions of his appointed ministers. The first preserves the identity of his faith and guards the integrity of his law. The second enables it, even as a living organism, to expand and adapt itself to the needs and requirements of an ever-changing society." Finally, as we look at this unique pattern for a new world order, we see how it fulfills the practical realization of those ideals which the prophets of God have visualized, and which, from time immemorial, have inflamed the imagination of seers and poets in every age. These words were taken from one of the earliest world order letters addressed by Shoghi Effendi to the Baha'is of the West. It was actually written in 1930. It deals specifically with the differences between the Baha'i faith and the ecclesiastical organizations of other religions, and this chapter could well close with a few more sentences from this highly significant letter. Baha'u'llah has not only imbued mankind with a new and regenerating spirit, he, as well as Abdu'l-Baha after him, has clearly and specifically laid down a set of laws, established divine institutions, and provided for the essentials of a divine economy. These are destined to be a pattern for future society, and the one agency for the unification of the world and the proclamation of the reign of righteousness and justice upon the earth. The Baha'i Fund. With the rapid spread of the Baha'i faith around the world, the building of its beautiful houses of worship in all the continents, and the purchase of many thousands of local and national Baha'i centers or headquarters, page 85, with many hundreds of national and local endowments, Baha'i schools, training institutes, and other institutions, the question is often asked, where does all the money come from? Only Baha'is may contribute to the Baha'i Fund. No teaching may be done, no property purchased, no endowments established, and no Baha'i activity may be carried out with monies except those which have come from a recognized Baha'i source. To contribute to the Baha'i Fund is an obligation upon every Baha'i. The amount he or she gives, when it is given, in what form the donation takes, whether it be given for the general use of the administrative body to which it is donated, or whether it is earmarked for a special purpose, are all left to the conscience of the individual believer. The giving is done quietly, even secretly, from the individual to the local, national, or international treasurer. Page 86. Should a non-Baha'i try to insist on giving a contribution, it would be made clear that such monies could not be used for the work of the Baha'i faith, but would be donated to some charity. Shoghi Effendi wrote, I feel urged to remind you of the necessity of ever bearing in mind the cardinal principle that all contributions to the fund are to be purely and strictly voluntary in character. It should be made clear and evident to everyone that any form of compulsion, however slight and indirect, strikes at the very root of the principle underlying the formation of the fund ever since its inception. The supply of funds constitutes the lifeblood of those nascent institutions which you are laboring to erect. Its importance cannot surely be overestimated. Untold blessings shall no doubt crown every effort directed to that end. We must be like the fountain or spring that is continually emptying itself of all that it has and is continually being refilled from an invisible source. To be continually giving out for the good of our fellows, undeterred by the fear of poverty and reliant on the unfailing bounty of the source of all wealth and all good, this is the secret of right living. Page 87. Baha'i Houses of Worship. In the days to come, there will be Baha'i houses of worship in every town and village, but at the moment they are only being built on the basis of one per continent or island group, though many temple sites have been purchased for future development. With a membership which is relatively small, it is considered more important to give most of the Baha'i contributions to help spread the faith and to assist the poor and uneducated believers in the developing countries. This leaves the building of beautiful houses of worship for the future when many more millions have embraced the faith. The houses of worship already built, or in the process of being built, demonstrate the new concepts of worship, and are only being built on a continental basis, and then gradually developed as examples of what these institutions will be like in the future. There will be a central house of worship which will be nine-sided, have its doors open to all peoples of all races, and will be domed. Within its walls, only the human voice will be raised, either singing, chanting, or reading, and no musical instruments will be used. Only selections from the holy scriptures of different religions will be used, and no preaching or administrative activity will take place in the house of worship. Page 88. As the situation develops, there will be built around the central house of worship and accessory buildings, such as a school for science, a hospice, a hospital, and a home for orphans. In other words, the house of worship, according to Baha'i understanding, caters not only for the spiritual needs of the community it serves, but also its social, educational, and humanitarian needs. Its proper name in Arabic means dawning place of the praise of God. Presently, there are completed houses of worship in Wilmette, USA, Kampala, Uganda, Frankfurt, Germany, Sydney, Australia, and Panama City, while plans have been made for houses of worship in India and Western Samoa. Reader's note, as of this reading, those temples have been completed. Returning to text. The Wilmette Temple has one dependency, a home for the aged, and in Wilmette, Kampala, and Frankfurt, the national headquarters are in the vicinity of the Central House of Worship. Page 89. The Baha'i Calendar. There is a surprising number of calendars in use around the world, and it is essential, if real-world unity is to be achieved, that there should be one calendar that is recognized and acceptable the world over. It is an essential part of the distinctive Baha'i life that all the Baha'is the world over observe in their religious activities a calendar which was inaugurated by the Bab. This calendar brings some entirely new ideas in the measurement of time and the fixing of dates. The solar year was adopted, but it begins, like the ancient Persian New Year and the modern Iranian Nowruz, with the March equinox, 21 March. It is therefore astronomically fixed, and the Baha'i era commences with the year of the Declaration of the Bab, 1844. In the Baha'i year, there are 19 months of 19 days each, making a total of 361 days. So between the 18th and 19th month, there are four or five intercalary days. The 19th month is a month of fasting in preparation for the celebration of the New Year's Day, Nowruz. The Bab named the months after the attributes of God, and the Baha'i day starts and ends at sunset. The names of the 19 months are as follows. I'll give them simply in the sequence beginning with the first month. I'll give the Arabic name and its translation, and then the first day of that month, according to the Gregorian calendar. Baha, splendor, 21 March. Jalal, glory, 9 April. Jamal, beauty, 28 April. Azamat, grandeur, 17 May. Nur, light, 5 June. Ramat, mercy, 24 June. Kalamat, words, 13 July. Kamal, perfection, 1 August. Azma, names, 20 August. Izzat, might, 8 September. Mashiat, will, 27 September. Ilm, knowledge, 16 October. Qudrat, power, 4 November. Qal, speech, 23 November. Mazi'il, questions, 12 December. Sharaf, honor, 31 December. Sultan, sovereignty, 19 January. Mulk, dominion, 7 February. Allah, loftiness, 2 March. Page 90. During the year, there are special feasts and anniversaries, as well as the days of fasting, and these are listed as follows. Feast of Rizwan, Declaration of Baha'u'llah, 21 April, 2nd May, 1863. Feast of Nowruz, Baha'i New Year, March 21st. Declaration of the Bab, 23 May, 1844. Day of the Covenant, 26 November. Birth of Baha'u'llah, 12 November, 1817. Birth of the Bab, 20 October, 1819. Birth of Abdul Baha, 23 May, 1844. Ascension of Baha'u'llah, 29 May, 1892. Martyrdom of the Bab, 9 July, 1850. Ascension of Abdul Baha, 28 November, 1921. Period of the Fast, 19 days, beginning with the first day of the month of Allah, 2 March. During the Baha'i year, there are 9 holy days on which all work is suspended. 3 of these are in the period which commemorates the Declaration of Baha'u'llah, and there is one for the Declaration of the Bab. Others celebrate the birth of Baha'u'llah and the birthday of the Bab, while 2 commemorate the deaths of Baha'u'llah and the Bab. The 9th one is the New Year's Day. Relations with the non-Baha'i world. Much emphasis has been paid in this part of the book to the distinctive character of the Baha'i life and the way the Baha'i community functions and observes its special calendar. It must not be thought, however, that the Baha'i seek to work in seclusion or form communes or are in any way isolated from their fellow human beings. On the contrary, they seek at all times to be fully involved in whatever activity seems to serve the best interests of their fellow men and of mankind as a whole. They are constantly having to assess the allocation of their time, for on the whole, they are very involved and active individuals. When they are young, they have a burning desire to do well in their schooling so that they can make the maximum contribution to society. At the same time, however, they are eager to have their Baha'i youth activities, attend weekend schools, summer schools, and go out travel teaching for their faith, both at home and overseas. Page 91. Many young Baha'is use the opportunity of the local school holidays to visit Baha'i communities in areas which do not frequently receive outside visitors, and many of the Baha'i youth from the United Kingdom have traveled in Europe, Africa, and South America, while some of them even have even been travel teaching in India and Malaysia. In assessing the allocation of their time, Baha'is must also be aware of the need to participate as fully as possible with movements that are also actively furthering the well-being of mankind. At a local level, the Baha'is are frequently active within the branches of the United Nations Association or of UNICEF, and others try to establish branches of the World Congress of Faiths and participate eagerly in all kinds of interfaith activities. At a national level, Baha'is are also involved in working with the United Nations Association, UNICEF, the World Congress of Faiths, the Standing Conference of Interfaith Dialogue and Education, the Religious Education Council, the Association of World Federalists, and other similar organizations that are absolutely universal in their approach. If any organization with which the Baha'is are associating becomes involved in any partisan or political activity, or begins to take sides in any way by showing some preference to one ideology or the other, to East or West, to black or to white, then the Baha'is will withdraw their support. They will not sponsor nor give their backing to any activity which seeks to promote the interests of just one group. Page 92. It is in the area of international affairs that some striking developments have taken place in recent years. In the spring of 1947, the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of the United States and Canada was accredited to the United Nations Office of Public Information, OPI, as a national non-governmental organization qualified to be represented through an observer. A year later, however, 8 such national assemblies were collectively recognized as an international non-governmental organization under the title Baha'i International Community. On 27 May 1970, the Baha'i International Community was granted consultative status by the Economic and Social Council, and on 8 March 1976 was officially accredited with the United Nations Children Fund, UNICEF. The Baha'i International Community works closely with the ECOSOC, its functional commissions, committees, and other associated bodies. It has participated in United Nations years and major UN conferences concerned with the social and economic problems of the planet, such as those on human environment, population, food, status of women, crime prevention, human settlements, and water, and in many regional conferences and seminars. For all these activities, it produces statements on world issues of concern to the United Nations, which are circulated as official UN documents, and it has published several brochures. These not only offer the Baha'i approach to life and society, but suggest the application of certain Baha'i principles to specific world problems. It would be fitting to close this relatively brief textbook on the Baha'i faith with a quotation from one of the documents produced by the Baha'i International Community in June 1977. It is from a section dealing with the contribution of the worldwide Baha'i community to the ideals of the United Nations Charter. In the basic areas of motivation and attitude, the Baha'i International Community is making a valuable contribution towards improving the quality of life of all people, essential for the achievement of universal human rights and world peace. For instance, 1. Baha'i communities have gained a considerable experience in eliminating all forms of prejudice in pursuance of the Baha'i principle of the organic oneness of humanity and the systematic abolition of prejudice and discrimination. Page 93. Baha'i communities educate their members concerning the positive values and contributions of all religions in order to eradicate religious prejudice. They also assert the full dignity of the individual, regardless of ethnic background, and the conviction that there is but one human race has guided the actions of their members concerning rights and responsibilities. 2. Baha'i communities are helping to overcome the obstacles of tradition and superstition which prevent many people from benefiting from the improvements of science and technology. Because the Baha'i teachings, from which Baha'i communities draw their beliefs and strengths, see no conflict between religion and social and economic development. In addition, Baha'is are taught that religion must work hand in hand with science. 3. Furthermore, the Baha'i faith stresses the importance of the mind of man, since it is this consciousness that differentiates him from the animal. The human mind must be properly educated spiritually and materially. 4. Consequently, Baha'i communities have fostered the principle of universal compulsory education by establishing primary and secondary schools open to children of all backgrounds and beliefs in places where educational facilities are not available. In addition, these communities have established adult education programs in basic literacy and community development. 5. Arts and sciences are praised, and Baha'is are enjoined to dedicate themselves to those areas of human knowledge that do not begin and end in words, but are of benefit to mankind. Finally, since Baha'i communities are concerned with developing in each person his highest potentialities, besides love, compassion, and truth and justice, the moral qualities of honesty, trustworthiness, truthfulness, as well as ensuring that such qualities will be reflected in social action and interaction, the results of this education are bound to have an impact beyond the Baha'i environment. Such values, firmly linked as they are in Baha'i communities with the consciousness of the interdependence of all peoples and the goal of one world united in peace, provide the fundamental motivation for action in solving the problems of our world.
Baha'i International Community, 1977. This concludes the reading of the book, The Baha'i Faith, by Mary Perkins and Philip Hainsworth, ending on page 93. If you have any further questions about the Baha'i Faith or about material contained in this book and would like to ask some questions, you are free to do so, and you may contact either the Baha'i National Center at Wilmette, that's Wilmette, Illinois, 60091, or you may write directly to the Baha'i Service for the Blind, and you may use whatever medium is best suited for you, either on tape or print or braille. And if you do not have a current address for the Baha'i Service for the Blind, you may address the Baha'i Service for the Blind, care of the Baha'i National Center in Wilmette, Illinois.